Jayamaro, Jaya Kunjavi, Jaya Randamada, Jaya Kunjavi, Gopi Janabalaba, Jaya Giri Varuda. Jaya Giri Madhudhari Gopi Jana Ballabha Jaya Giri Madhudhari Jaya Giri Madhudhari Yashoda Nandana Jaya Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Jaya Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Parachariyo Kunjabi Avi Jaya Kunjabi Avi Yamuna Tira Parachari Daya Kunjabi Avi Daya Kunjabi Avi Jaya Radha Madhova Jaya Kunjabi Avi Radha Madhova Jaya Kunjabi Jana Balaba Jaya Giri Varunari Giri Varunari Jana Balaba Jaya Giri Varunari Giri Varunari Yasoda Nandana
Sabaya Chanana Bhakta Banana Goswami Srila Prabhupada Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Jai Namacharya Shilavidas Thakur Jai Ren Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrindika Jai Shishi Radha Krishna Gopikopana Sain Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturidam Kijai Jagadapasami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Shimadi Talasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindika Jai Gaur Krimananda Hari Haribol. All glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada, Kijai, Gaur Prabhananda, Nama Om Vishnupadaya, Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Bananta Swaman Namani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarane. So, Om Ganatimadandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Minikam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Maha. Offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So we'll continue with our study of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And we chant, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaur Bhaktivinoda, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaur Bhaktivinoda, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra, Jaya Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Okay, I'll just share a little realization I had today. I think I shared it before, but it's good sharing it again, that our happiness or misery is dependent upon the mind. And of course, this is our philosophy. Whoops, let's see. What was that message? This is our philosophy. And if you can control your mind, you can avoid being miserable. And the reason I'm bringing that out is that I had this realization yesterday. It was raining and it was cold out. At least according to my estimation, it was cold. So I went outside and I walked outside and I was thinking how wonderful it is. You know, I took a positive attitude towards it. And then it wasn't miserable and raining anymore. It was raining, yes. It was cold, yes. And it wasn't miserable. But we can choose like that according to how we control and focus the mind. Because many people, and I've experienced that a lot with devotees, and devotees who are maybe not so advanced in devotional service, that they'll convince themselves that something is so miserable. And I've seen that in the temple, especially during the winter when it's cold. Where people keep sending me messages. And the people who are sending me messages should realize that I'm giving class at this time. And they shouldn't be sending attachments at this time. It's really not appropriate. So anyway, so let's get back to the point. So I've had experience with many devotees. They're just, you know, the weather's not to their liking. They were really obsessed, and they'll think, oh, it's really miserable. I can't stand it. And then they're making themselves miserable. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and its enemy as well. So the mind can make you miserable, and the mind can make you happy. I mean, of course, if it's focused on Krishna, then the mind actually is your is your friend. But in any case, dealing with these mundane material emotions, this principle of obsession really, really makes us miserable. When we sing the blues or we meditate on the blues. So you can look at, let's say the weather, it's cold, rainy, dark. Just say, it's cold, rainy, dark. It's really cold, rainy, dark. It's really miserable. It's nasty. It's horrible. Oh, horrible, horrible, horrible. Then you feel horrible, horrible, horrible. Or if something happens not to your liking, then you begin to obsess on it. But instead, put a positive thought. This is actually Krishna's arrangement. And think about the things that are very nice. You know, your fortune in this world. What is your fortune? You come in contact with Krishna consciousness. It's amazing yeah, the material world is a place of misery. I understand that. But you're making it more miserable than it actually is because of your attachment and your obsession on your attachment. So just about everybody in this world is OCD. Obsessive compulsive disorder. So we have to really focus our mind on Krishna and feel positive we have Krishna. I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen? Let's say death comes. Okay, death. You should think positively. That's just a change of body, an opportunity to render more service in the next life. Message comes, then I simply say, that person's a rascal, sending the message to the middle class. Anyway, so anyways, that's funny. So in any case, it's really important to control the mind. You're making yourself more miserable than you actually are. The real misery is you're separated from Krishna. Everything else is secondary to that. So think like that and count your blessings. You know, I have Krishna, I have the holy names. You know, I'm initiated or not initiated. I'm fortunate, I'm not starving to death, you know. So count your blessings. Instead of just getting into, you know, how bad the weather is. And it's just like, then you're into Sukha Dukkha all the time. You're on roller coaster all the time. It's ridiculous. Just say to your stupid mind, it's nice out. It's nice. And it is. Heat and cold, pleasure and pain. What is that? Matras Parshishta Kontiya Sitoshna Sukha Dukkata. Why is it nice? Because it's Krishna. And you see Krishna behind everything and in everything. Yomam Pashati Sarvatra Sarvam Chamai Pashati Tashaham Na Panashami Sachame Na Panashati. One who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me has never lost me, nor am I ever lost to him. So then you can heat, cold, pleasure, pain, happiness, distress, love, not love. As I say, she loves me, she loves me not, she loves me, she loves me not, like people do. It's in the mind. It's in the mind. Control your mind. And the mind is the friend of the conditioned soul. But when you begin to meditate on something, Krishna says in the Gita, Jayato Vishayak Pulsam Sangostesha Vijayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Krodha Vijayate. So it's not only meditation on gross sense objects that Krishna is talking about in this particular verse. You know, like for example, I may be meditating on my microphone here, which everybody sees. I become attached to it. I want to possess it. Whatever. I already do possess it. So, it's mine. My dear microphone. It's all I have in this world. I'm just a sannyasi. All I have in this world is a microphone and a computer. So, you know, you become attached. So instead, it's not just gross sense objects. It's subtle sense objects, you know, mentalities. You meditate on a particular consciousness or happiness and distress, and you actually become attached to it. And you become miserable or happy depending upon that attachment. So much. Anyway, that's my latest realization for all of you. Control your mind. Don't meditate on things that are counterproductive to Krishna consciousness. Or else, Jayato Vishapam Samasangos Kesha Pajayate, Sangats and Jayate Kama. You become overcome with Kama, even towards thoughts or patterns of thoughts. Krodha Bhavati Samoha. And then you become angry, and then you become bewildered. Then you lose your intelligence. Then you become lost. So control your mind, Prabhus and Prabhis. Okay, so on that happy note, we will go to the Chaitanya Charitamrita and read some nectar. That's my practical message for today. Okay, let's share the screen. And we are on the seventh chapter of the Adi Lila, beginning with text 102, which is an auspicious number. Let me get the screen properly cleared. Mind could be your greatest friend or your greatest enemy. And the uncontrolled mind is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. And you are living with your enemy. That's horrible. We have seen the enemy, and the enemy is us, as they say. Okay, just give me 1 second. And, of course, if any people do have questions, not about this, don't ask me questions about controlling the mind. At least not right now. You can raise your hand while I'm doing the reading and ask a question if something is important. Okay, text 102. Etashuni hasi prabhu valila vachana dukana manahayati kari nivedana. After hearing, after hearing the Mayavadi sannyasi speak in that way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smiled slightly and said, "My dear sirs, if you don't mind, I can say something to you regarding Vedanta philosophy." The Mayavadi sannyasis, appreciating Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, inquired from him why he did not discuss Vedanta philosophy. Actually, however, the entire system of Vaishnava activities is based on Vedanta philosophy. Vaishnavas do not neglect Vedanta, but they do not care to understand Vedanta on the basis of the Sharirakya Bhasha commentary. Therefore, to clarify the situation, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with the permission of the Mayavadi sannyasis, wanted to speak regarding Vedanta philosophy. The Vaishnavas are by far the greatest philosophers in the world, and the greatest among them was Srila Jiva Goswami, whose philosophy was again presented in less than 400 years later by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj. Therefore, one must know very well that Vaishnava philosophers are not sentimentalists or cheap devotees like the Sahajas. All the Vaishnava Acharyas were vastly learned scholars who understood Vedanta philosophy fully. For unless one knows Vedanta philosophy, he cannot be an Acharya. To be accepted as an Acharya among Indian transcendentalists who follow the Vedic principles, one must become a vastly learned scholar in Vedanta philosophy, either by studying it or by hearing it. Bhakti develops in pursuance of Vedanta philosophy. This is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, text 12. Pankshradanana munayo jnanavairagya yuktaya pashantyatmane chatmanam vachya shruta grihitaya. The words bhaktya shruta grihitaya in this verse are very important, for they indicate that bhakti must be based upon the philosophy of the Upanishads of Vedanta Sutra. Srila Rupa Goswami said, Shruti smriti puranari pancharatrika vidhim vinam ikantaki harir bhaktir. Utpathayaiva kalpate, devotional service performed without reference to the Vedas, Puranas, Pancharatras, etc., must be considered sentimentalism, and it causes nothing but disturbance to society. There are different grades of Vaishnavas, Kanishta Adhikari. We talked about this previously. Majjhima Adhikari and Uttama Adhikari. But to be a Majjhima Adhikari preacher, one must be a learned scholar in the Vedanta Sutra and other Vedic literatures, because when Bhakti Yoga develops on the basis of Vedanta philosophy, it is factual and steady. In this connection, we may quote the translation and purport of the verse mentioned above, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.12. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. The absolute truth is realized in full by the process of devotional service to the Lord Vasudeva, or the personality of Godhead, who is the full-fledged absolute truth. Brahman is his transcendental bodily effulgence, and Paramatma is his partial representation. As such, Brahman or Paramatma realization of the absolute truth is but a partial realization. There are four different types of human beings: the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, and other devotees. The karmis are materialistic, whereas the other three are transcendental. The first-class transcendentalists are the devotees who have realized the Supreme Person. The second-class transcendentalists are those who have partially realized the plenary portion of the Absolute Person. That means Paramatma, the Lord in the heart. And the third-class transcendentalists are those who have barely realized the spiritual focus of the Absolute Person. That means they have realized the Brahman effulgence, the light, the energy, the oneness. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures, the Supreme Person is realized by devotional service, which is backed by full knowledge and detachment from material association. We have already discussed the point that devotional service is followed by knowledge and detachment from material association. As Brahman and Paramatma realization are imperfect realizations of the Absolute Truth, so the means of realizing Brahman and Paramatma, that is, the paths of jnana and yoga, are also imperfect means of realizing the Absolute Truth. Devotional service, which is based on the foreground of full knowledge combined with detachment from material association, and which is fixed by dint of oral reception of the Vedanta Shruti, is the only perfect method by which the seriously inquisitive student can realize the Absolute Truth. Devotional service is not therefore meant for the less intelligent class of transcendentalists. There are three classes of devotees, namely the first, second, and third class, that's the Uttama Adhikari, Majjhima Adhikari, and Kanishtha Adhikari. The third class devotees are the neophytes, who have no knowledge and are not detached from material association, but who are simply attracted by the preliminary process of worshiping the deity in the temple, are called material devotees. Material devotees are more attached to material benefit than transcendental profit. Therefore, one has to make definite progress from the position of material devotional service to the second-class devotional position. In the second-class position, the devotee can see four principles in the devotional line, namely, the personality of Godhead, his devotees, the ignorant, and the envious. One has to raise himself at least to the stage of a second-class devotee and thus become eligible to know the Absolute Truth. A third-class devotee, therefore, has to receive the instructions of devotional service from the authoritative sources of the Bhagavat. The number one Bhagavat is the established personality of devotee, and the other Bhagavat is the message of Godhead, the book. The third class devotee, therefore, has to go to the personality of devotee in order to learn the instructions of devotional service. Such a personality of devotee, that's spiritual master, is not a professional man who earns his livelihood by the business of the Bhagavatam. Such a devotee must be a representative of Shukadeva Goswami, like Suta Goswami, and must preach the cult of devotional service for the all-around benefit of all people. A neophyte devotee has very little taste for hearing from the authorities. Such a neophyte devotee makes a show of hearing from the professional man to satisfy his senses. This sort of hearing and chanting has spoiled the whole thing, so one should be very careful about the faulty process. The holy messages of Godhead, as inculcated in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, are undoubtedly transcendental subjects, but even though they are so, such transcendental matters are not to be received from the professional man who spoils them as the serpent spoils milk simply by the touch of his tongue. A sincere devotee, therefore, must be prepared to hear the Vedic literature like the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, and other literatures left by the previous authorities or Goswamis, for the benefit of his progress. Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress. And without hearing and following the instructions, the show of devotional service becomes worthless and therefore a sort of disturbance in the path of devotional service. Unless, therefore, devotional service is established on the principles of Shruti, that means the Vedic literatures, the original Vedas, and the Upanishad, Smriti, that means the, that includes actually Itihasa, Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, like the supplementary Vedic literatures, and Puranas, that means like the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Pancharatra means instructions in how to do devotional service by the Acharyas. The Meksho of devotional service should at once be rejected, and unauthorized devotees should never be recognized as a pure devotee. By assimilation of such messages from the Vedic literatures, one can see the all-pervading localized aspect of the personality of Godhead within his own self constantly. This is called samadhi. So in other words, before I take this first question, in other words, devotee has to become expert in Vedanta, but how do you become expert in the Vedanta and the Vedanta Sutras? You become expert in reading the commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. You don't have to read the Vedanta Sutras directly. You can read the commentary, and that commentary is Srimad Bhagavatam. So one should study the Srimad Bhagavatam, and in that way, you will be expert in every aspect of devotional service. But you should study the Bhagavatam beginning from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is considered to be the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, up to the 10th canto, which is the smiling face of the Lord, and then the 11th and 12th cantos. And this way you will become perfectly Krishna conscious by becoming an expert in the Bhagavatam. And to understand the Bhagavatam, as Prabhupada said, one has to approach the person Bhagavat. That's the devotee. Okay. So now we will allow Prangovinda to ask a question. Okay, you're allowed to unmute yourself. Speak now.
Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisance, Srila Krishna Prabhupada.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Maharaj, I heard this verse from you at least 3 times in last few weeks or month. Jomam paschati sarvatra sarvam chamoi paschati. Now I'm trying to understand that view in one place Bhagavatam Prabhupada said one take the photo of the deity and then paste it in everything else he sees in the world, that Krishna is there in everywhere. That's a one view. Another view is that another lecture Prabhupada said there are some rascal Mayavadis or impersonalists, they say that why do I have to go to temple? God is everywhere. And then he quoted this verse. He said, but this is very advanced days. Jomam paschati sarvatra sarvam chamoi paschati. This is not for ordinary. One should see the Lord in the heart first. So I want to understand how can I progress, or maybe you are situated in that you want us to become advanced like you, or...
I'm not saying I'm advanced. I mean, the point is, first of all, the Mayavadis say that God is everywhere else, but he's not in the temple. Prabhupada would also criticize that. They won't go to the temple to see the deities. So to see Krishna everywhere, and to see everything in Krishna, means to see everything as Krishna's energy. And also understand that Krishna is in everyone's heart. And also understand that not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. Also understand the Lord has actually created everything. He's the creator, the maintainer, the destroyer of everything. There's different ways to see Krishna and everything that don't require one to be an absolutely pure devotee. An absolutely pure devotee is premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena shantakshanaiva radiation, vilokyanti. His eyes are tinged with the salve of love of God. And so he sees Krishna everywhere. Now, how does he see Krishna everywhere? It doesn't mean that he sees little Krishnas, you know, just like floating in the air with four arms. What it means is, like Prabhupada described, when one sees the shoes of someone or the car of someone, then one remembers the person to whom the shoes or car belong. Just like Just like my mother, for example, she used to have, I think she gave it to the devotees, she used to have my shoes from when I was a little baby. I wasn't a little baby. The body was a baby body. I had a little baby body. I was never a baby. I was never a baby. Isn't that? That's a true statement. You were never a baby. I was never a baby. To say that I was a baby indicates that I am in ignorance if I say that. So, once upon a time, my soul was inhabiting many times a baby body. And that baby body had baby shoes. And those baby shoes were bronzed. In other words, they took some metal and made deities out of them. And my mother put them on her altar. So every time she saw those shoes, her heart melted because she understood. Those are my baby son's shoes, even though it's all illusion. So in the same way, it's important for us to see, just like, you know, I'm looking at my computer, I'm looking at my microphone, I'm looking at my camera, to understand, what is that? Ishabasham idam sarvam yatkin cha javajam jatat. Tena chaktena bunjadha magridha kashyaspindanam. Everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And everyone is given a quota. But it belongs to him. So that's what it means to see Krishna everywhere and everything. And one doesn't have to be an absolutely pure devotee to see like that. One just has to keep reminding oneself. This belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. Bhoktaram jagatapasam. Sarva Loka Maheshram, Suridam Sarva Bhutanam, Gatwamam Shanti. Krishna is the enjoyer, he's the proprietor, he's the well-wisher. And then we'll be peaceful. So that way we can see Krishna and everything and see Krishna everywhere. It doesn't take a great advancement in devotional service to see like that. However, we also want to see Krishna's transcendental form. That's why we go to the temple. To see Krishna manifest his transcendental form. And all the Goswamis of Vrindavan worship Krishna in the temple. They worship the Archa Vigraha. I mean, that's really important. That's essential for every devotee, advanced, neophyte, or whatever position you happen to be in, to worship the transcendental form of the Lord. So anyway, we are meant to see, if we don't see Krishna everywhere, then we're Maya, when we're not seeing Krishna. And that's also mentioned in the Bhagavatam. What is that? Ritevatam na pratyeta, na pratyeta chatmani tadvidyad atmano mayam yukavasha yatatamaha. That if you see anything without relationship to me, Krishna says, know that to be my illusory energy, which is like a reflection that appears in darkness. So it's not so difficult to see Krishna in everything. I'm not saying that you have to see the spiritual body of everybody or see Krishna dancing and playing his flute. But at least through your intelligence, Shastra Chakshush, you can see Krishna and everything. And if you're not, if you're not seeing Krishna in everything and everywhere, you're Maya. You're lost. You were lost. Of course, you can always be found. Like that song goes, I once was lost, and now I'm found. There's a famous song like that. It's a Christian song. Amazing grace, how sweet it is. That chanted a soul like me. I once was lost and now I'm found. Hare Krishna, Hare. That's how the song goes. Anyway, so.
Sounds sweet.
Yeah, it's actually a song. And you could chant Hare Krishna to the same melody. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare. Hare Rama. Hey, Rama, 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 Hare, Hare. Anyway, so hope that answers your question. Of course, a pure devotee, he says, sees Yam Shaima Shundra Machinjiguna Swarupam. You know, he sees Krishna Shaima Shundra. But at least intellectually, intelligently, we should see that everything belongs to Krishna, everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure, everything is controlled by Krishna, everything has a purpose. I think that's enough. Okay.
Very good answer. Maharaj, one more, can I just relate it to this?
Yes, one more.
In case if I, by your mercy, if I was with the six Goswamis and they're crying, Hey Radhe, Hey Braja Devike, Chalalite, I would probably intervene and say, why are you crying, Rupa Goswami? There is Radha Govinda temple. You built it. You installed the deity there. Krishna is there. Why are you crying?
Well, then Rupa Goswami would say, get out of here, you rascal. Because he's crying, feeling the mood of separation from Krishna. Because he sees the deity as Krishna. Shakshad Rajendra Nandana. That's like Madhavendra Puri. Yes, I already said it's Vipralamba. That's like when Madhavendra Puri was leaving the planet and he was crying out, I have not reached Mathura. And Ramchandra Puri came and gave him advice, meditate on Brahman. He said, get out of here, you rascal. So that's what the Goswamis would say to you, get out of here, you rascal. And then your spiritual life would be finished. You started to give advice to Rupa Goswami or Sanatana Goswami. Hey, Radhe, Brajadevike. Hey, Nanda, Shuno, Kuta. That's Radharani, Krishna, where are you? Hey, Radhe.
Thank you, Maharaj. I'll never do that. Thank you.
No, don't do that. You see Rupa Goswami, whatever they say is perfect. Don't say, hey, why are you crying out? Krishna's there in the temple. Hey, Rupa Prabhu. Just walk into the Radha Govinda temple and see him. You know, don't be lamenting. Brahma Buddha, Prasanatma, Nishochati, Nakanshati, Samak Sarveshu, Bhute, Shu, Mad Bhaktim, Labhate Param. That means one who's absorbed in Brahman, like you, Rupa Goswami, should now not anchor on that. So, therefore, come to the Brahman platform. Anyway, then the next thing you know, you will see Yamaraj. Okay. So, let's take another one. And then we got Rakesh has a question. Okay, you can unmute yourself.
Please accept my humble obeisance, Guru.
Haribol.
The only question I have is, I'm from Jainism. I'm from Jainism, and Samadhi is what they, is the highest of the goal for us. But yes. Here it says, that it's only, in Samadhi, all you see is a localized aspect of personality of Godhead. So when it says localized, there has to be something which is beyond local. And not only that, if we study, three categories of Vishnu, three Vishnus, Karnodai, Garbhodai, and Chirodhakshi.
Yeah.
So Chirodhakshi is the localized aspect of Paramatma, if I'm not wrong. So
Chirodhakshi, yes.
So am I just understanding that in Samadhi, all you get to understand only Chirodhakshi Vishnu, and beyond that, the spiritual world or anything is beyond the aspect of even Samadhi, so Samadhi is a very...
It depends on your relationship. Depends on Sambandha. If you're a yogi, then you'll see Shiradakshay Vishnu. If you are a devotee of Krishna and Braj, you will see Radha and Krishna in your heart.
Oh. So for Jainism and Buddhism, it's not going to be Radha and Krishna. It's going to be only Shiradakshay Vishnu.
Buddhism, you won't see any Vishnu.
Oh.
You'll see one of the black holes. In Buddhism, you'd see the black hole. You know what a black hole in space is? Anyway, You can look it up on the internet later on. And Jainism, I'm not that expert to say what you would see if you became a perfect Jain, but, you know, obviously, Tirthankara. There's many Jains, Tirthankaras.
Yes, 24.
Yeah, so if you were to become perfect in loving God, depending on the form of God you were worshiping, then you would see that form in your heart.
Oh, yes. Understand now.
Just like Hanuman, just like your friend and mine, Hanuman.
Yes.
Who did he have in his heart?
Shri Ram,
Sita and Ram.
Yes.
He opened up his chest, and there was Sita and Ram. That's pretty blissful, isn't it?
It is.
If I were to open up my chest, all you would see would be blood. Nothing attractive in my heart. Blood. No, actually, you'd probably open up my heart and see computers and mobile phones and everything within my heart. If you could look at my heart of hearts. Premanjana churi bhakti vilo jena shantak shadaiva radiation viloki into yam electronics achinchaguna svarupam. No, actually, I also like Krishna. So anyways, we should actually... But it's an interesting point. What is actually in our hearts? There's some story in the Ramayana that before Ravan could be killed, Ram had to remove Sita from his heart. It was interesting. Ram had to, in other words, attack Ravan in such a way that Sita was not in the heart of Ravan. Because it wasn't real Sita, it was Maya Sita. We understand that. So, but we should look in our hearts and see what's there. What is in our hearts? What are we hankering for? Are we hankering for the latest car, computer? Are we hankering for our, quote, soulmate? The girl or the boy of my dreams? What are we hankering for? What's in our hearts? We got to be honest with ourselves, at least. Don't put it on Facebook. But we have to be honest, really, what is in our hearts? Just look in your heart, not literally, figuratively, and see what's really there. Is it Krishna? Or is it some imitation Krishna? Or energy of Krishna? Okay, so enough heavy sannyas talk. Let's go on with the reading right now before I burn anyone else out. Okay, no more questions, Pranav Govinda. You asked enough today. Now we are going, other people can ask questions. So let's continue. Just think about what's in your heart. It's really embarrassing to actually admit what's in our heart. In our heart of hearts. Not just talk about the heart. What's in your heart of hearts, the real depth of your heart. The depths of your heart. Who knows what shadow lurks in the darkness? Anyway, text 103. Iha shuni male sarva sanyasira gana. Omake digiye aiche sakshat Narayana. Hearing this, the Mayavadi sannyasi became somewhat humble and addressed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Narayana himself, who they all agreed he was. And Prabhupada says, Mayavadi sannyasis address each other as Narayana. Whenever they see another sannyasi, they offer him respect by calling, Om Namo Narayana, I offer my respect unto you, Narayana. Although they know perfectly well what kind of Narayana he is. Narayana has four hands. But although they are puffed up with the idea of becoming Narayana, they cannot exhibit more than two. Since their philosophy declares that Narayana and an ordinary human being are on the same level, they sometimes use the term Doredra Narayana, that means poor Narayana, which is invented by a so-called Swami who did not know anything about Vedanta philosophy. My God. I was talking about Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. Therefore, that's true. Vivekananda didn't know anything about Vedanta philosophy. He never read Vedanta. All he knew was yato mat tato pat. I'm okay, you're okay. Or as the hippies say, do your own thing. And if it feels good, it's good for you. That's where the hippies got their philosophy. Though all these Mayavadi sannyasis who call themselves Narayan were actually unaware of the position of Narayan. Due to their austerities, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu enabled them to understand him to be Narayan himself. Lord Chaitanya is certainly the supreme personality of Godhead, Narayan appearing as a devotee of Narayan, and thus the Mayavadi sannyasis understand that he was directly Narayan himself, whereas they were false, puffed-up Narayanists. Puffed-up means proud, Narayan spoke to him as follows. Tomaravachana shuni judaya shavana tomara madhuri deki judaya narayana. Dear Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they said, to tell you the truth, we are greatly pleased to hear your words, and furthermore, your bodily features are so pleasing that we feel extraordinary satisfaction in seeing you. In the Shastras, it is said, Takshi Krishna namadi nabhave krayam indriyai sevan mukhe jivado swayameva svarachada. With one's materially contaminated senses, one cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his name, form, qualities, or paraphernalia. But if one renders service unto him, the Lord reveals himself. Bhakti Arasamrita Sindhu 1.2.234. Here one can see the effect of the Mayavadi sannyasi's service toward Narayana. Because the Mayavadis offered a little respect to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and because they were pious and actually followed the austere rules and regulations of sannyas, they actually had some understanding of Vedanta philosophy, and by the grace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they could appreciate that he was none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is endowed with all six opulences. One of these opulences is his beauty. By his extraordinarily beautiful bodily features, the Mayavadi sannyasis recognized Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Narayan himself. He was not a farcical Narayan like the Daridra Narayans invented by so-called sannyasis. So I think we will end here and take more questions. So we ended in text 105. Let me write that down. So give a video a title. Now, one thing we should understand is as they were calling each other Narayan, Namo Narayan, they were actually chanting the Lord's holy name. That's interesting. They were saying, you're Narayan, I'm Narayan, we're all Narayan. But as they were saying Narayan, 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 they were chanting Narayan, just like a Jamil, meaning something else. They were chanting the name of the Lord, and that is actually Namavasa. At the same time, they were Aparadis because they had the Mayavad philosophy, so it's a combination. Because they thought, I am Narayan, that's a Mayavad philosophy. But basically, they got Krishna's mercy anyway because of the chanting of the Lord's holy names and because they were executing austerities. As Prabhupada said, they were austere. They understood they weren't the body. So, you know, they were partially there. But, you know, they had deviated, gone down a side road on the way to spiritual realization. Okay, on that happy note, we will stop sharing. It means we're creeping as if we stop sharing. Anyway. So we'll stop sharing and we allow everybody to, or whoever you want to, ask a question. Who wants to ask a question? First come, first serve.
I have a question, Maharaj.
Pran Govinda, you already asked questions. Give someone else a chance. The Vaishnavas will get very upset with you. And you don't want that. When Vaishnavas get upset, they get very angry. You don't. very dangerous, Rang Govinda. Okay, so who else has a question? If you don't ask a question, I'll have to ask Pran Govinda to ask his question. Oh, Rakesh, you have a question. Okay.
Good morning, Maharaj. We have six Goswamis, and we have Sarup Damodar Goswami.
Yeah.
And how come he is not part of those? He is the most elevated, like he is the most confident of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
The six Goswamis were the six Goswamis who were in Vrindavan, who were the next generation after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Swarup Damodar Goswami was not living in Vrindavan with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's generation. So there's different generations. So you had the six Goswamis of Vrindavan who were the leaders of the next generation. There were other Goswamis too. That's not to say that anyone was less advanced. I'm also Goswami. So it's not like a unique title only for six people, you know. Here I am. I wouldn't say. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was called the seventh Goswami, even though he wasn't a sannyasi, because he was actually so renounced in household life that he was as renounced as a sannyasi. So, yes, the six Goswamis were the next generation. The generation after that, the primary acharyas were the Narottama Das Thakur, Shyamananda, and Srinivas Acharya. So there's different generations. I mean, there's other Goswamis who were in Jagannath Puri with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But these six Goswamis were the most instrumental in carrying out Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions in Vrindavan. And what did they do? Nana Shastra Vichara Naikanipanosa Dharma Samstapako Lokanam Ipavano Tri Bhumane Banyo Sharanya Karo Radha Krishna Padara Vindo Vajana Mandena Matali Ko Mande Rupa Sanatano Raghu Yago Sri Jiva Gopala Ko. These six Goswamis perused all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles. And writing Vaishnava literatures, establishing the holy place in Vrindavan. That's six Goswamis. Then there were other Goswamis there. Lokanath Swami, Bhugarbha Swami. I mean, it's not like exclusive that only these six Goswamis were serving Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but they're the most prominent towards serving Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the next generation. But there were certainly other followers of Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada Saraswati, who was the uncle of Raghunath Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami's uncle. So, okay?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj. Thank you.
Everyone should become a Goswami instead of a Godas. Godas means I am the servant of my Go senses. And Goswami means I serve, control my senses. So how do you know you're a Godas? Well, that's easy. That means whatever your senses tell you to do, you do. You're an obedient servant of your senses. Manakshashtani Indriyani Prakriti Shtani Karshati. There's six senses. And one of them is the mind. This is what we talked about at the beginning of class, the mind. One who can control the mind, Krishna says, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. Remember that. If you can control your mind, you've reached the super soul, and you obtain tranquility. And the reason you're so miserable is you haven't controlled the mind, your attachment. Attachment and repulsion are felt, and that's from the mind. In the mind. This is the brain. Of course, that's not the mind right here. This is the brain, but like that. The Prabhupada said someone can either have Sumedasa or Gobar brain, cow manure in the brain. Cow manure is pure, but it doesn't belong in the brain. So I have a pure brain. It's just, I have Gobar brain. It's not pure in the brain. Okay, does that answer the question?
Yes, Gurudev. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll lower your hand for you. Oh, I've lowered your hand. It's nice being in charge in the internet here. I can lower everyone's hand and raise it, mute them, mute it. If only life was like that all the time, I could mute people and raise and lower their hands. Then life would be a lot more pleasant. But Krishna can do that. That's Krishna. He can mute people. He can raise their hands, lower their hands, do anything he wants. Yes, it is Krishna. Krishna is like the supreme Zoom host. He sees everybody's faces and he can kick them out or he can give them different avatars. He can send them to a different room if he wants to. It's interesting. I mean, I could take any of you and send you to your own room if you don't behave. There's this thing, there's this feature in Zoom called breakout rooms. So let's say if I don't like someone, let's say if Pran Govind is asking too many questions, I'll just take him and send him to his own room and we'll let him out. It's nice to be the host on Zoom. Okay. Because I'm being humorous, of course. Oh, Gopal, Mr. Cohen has a question. Is that a question or are you just clapping?
No, I was just clapping, Gurudev.
All right, just clapping.
Gurudev, can you please explain even further on mind, intelligence, and false ego, please?
Mind? The mind accepts. Okay, the mind is accepting and basing and rejecting things based upon what pleases us. It's like almost like instantaneous. Like if I say, like here, with my hands, I was actually playing with this magnet thing as I was talking to you as a magnet. Anyway, so my mind, you know, I saw it, my mind was attracted to it. Not attracted, I wouldn't say, but the mind was intrigued with it. So I started playing with it. It actually sticks to things. So that's attraction. Or if I saw something really ugly walk across the floor, like an ugly insect or something, my mind would be repulsed. So it's like that. We're attracted and repulsed by things. And that's what the mind is, or neutral. So the mind accepts and rejects things according to what pleases us or displeases us in the material world. And then the intelligence means that we have some goals in life, whether they're material goals or they're spiritual goals. That's another issue. But if we have spiritual goals, then we fix our intelligence upon those goals. And then we control our mind and senses based upon those goals. Like Krishna gives the example, or in the Upanishad, sorry. There's the example that the body is like a chariot. The passenger in the chariot is the soul. The driver of the soul is the intelligence, the reins of the mind, the horses are the senses, etc., like that. So you get a little idea. This is, of course, a metaphor. It's not that your senses are literally horses unless they're dragging you all over the place. So intelligence means to have some goal in life, you know, intelligence. And then mind, intelligence, and false ego. False ego basically means the concept of I and mine. And based upon that concept of I and mine, one uses his intelligence improperly. And even in the material world, we use our intelligence to control the mind, so we're not running around like a bunch of hippies. A hippie is one who just like, if you feel good, it's like a pig. If someone's simply on the mental platform, they're just like all day long, you know, something feels good, they feel this good. Good to drink, to have sex. They do it, you know, it's like impulse. like animal. Hoo, hoo, hoo. Sometimes you see people like that who are just like grunting all the time. You go to a bar, it's like that, basically. So, anyway, so we're meant to be, so that's material. But if one is Krishna conscious, and you fix your intelligence in Krishna, and you control everything, you control your mind, and you accept things favorable for Krishna conscious, reject things unfavorable, then you're on the Krishna conscious intelligence platform. And then you can progress. I think Adi Dave has a question. Okay, so Adi Dave, ask your question.
Yeah, Hare Krishna. I have a question about the Yoga Nidra. So is it just the Mahavishnu does undergo Yoga Nidra? And also I read some article where it says that this whole material creation is like a dreamlike state of Mahavishnu in Yoga Nidra.
Mahavishnu, they can do Yoga Nidra. Nidra means rest. Yoga means connection. But he's not unconscious while he's doing his yoga nidra rest. Like if we rest, we're basically either unconscious or having some illusory dream. And in our dream, we are not creating universes, except, you know, imaginary universes, virtual. It's like a computer. You can create virtual worlds. Not real worlds. But, you know, virtual worlds are real in the sense that they're virtual. So in one sense, this is actually quite interesting thinking about it. When Mahavishnu dreams, he's created this virtual world, the matrix. And so you have the ability to take the red prasadam or the blue prasadam, whatever. I don't know if you've ever seen the Matrix movie. The red prasadam or the blue boga. That'd be better. I'm sorry. I got it wrong. So you can get out of the matrix if you like. So yeah, it's a dream. It's virtual world. And actually the proof of the virtual world is Einstein's theory of non-locality. And that's a whole other class in and of itself, if you want me to give that class. But Einstein's theory of non-locality.
Is it Heisenberg's uncertainty principle related to that?
Yeah, that's related to Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, or also spooky action at a distance, as Einstein said. He used that word spooky. He didn't really believe in it. He thought it was just an illusion, but actually it's true. So let me explain, just like in the virtual world, you can actually jump from one place to another because everything is as close to anything else. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Beyond time and space?
No, in the virtual, let's take a computer simulation. Anything in the computer simulation, let's say a video game, is literally as close to anything else in the video game. In other words, you can jump. For example, I went into this one virtual world called Second Life one time just to find Gopal, who was lost there. I had to rescue him because he was lost in the Matrix one time.
Untrue.
He had gone to a Hare Krishna temple. This is true, in the Matrix.
Fake news.
He had gone to the Hare Krishna temple in the Matrix, and I had wanted to, you know, I went into the Matrix to try to get him out. So, anyways, I did meet him in there in the virtual world. This is true. So I could, in this virtual world, which is called Second Life, which at that time, 10 million people were living in at any one time, you could jump from one place to another instantaneously. Because really, there wasn't a distance, although there appeared to be a distance. when you're talking about a virtual world, it's all electronics. So we're in this world too. So you could actually, like Prabhupada talked about, you could travel at the speed of the mind to the other end of the universe. And at the spiritual speed, you can travel and pierce through the coverings of the universe. Whereas if you travel the speed of light, you can never reach the other side of the universe. Or if you travel at the speed of a rocket ship, you can never get very far. Even at the speed of light, how many minutes does it take for the sunlight to reach us? Was it about 8 minutes or something like that? Does anyone remember? I think it takes about 8 minutes. Yeah. 1 minute? No. Not 1 minute.
Yeah, it takes 8 minutes.
8 minutes, yeah. I was right, see? Guru is right. So anyway, so it takes 8 minutes. So that's not instantaneous travel, whereas speed of the mind is faster. And the speed of the mind actually is faster than the speed of light. So this indicates that there's some sort of virtual world that we're in. We're inside of Mahavishnu's virtual reality. He's created this in his dream. Anyway, if that doesn't cause you to be confused, I don't know what will. So there's many scientists who have realized that, and they've come up with this hypothesis called the simulation hypothesis. And if you're interested in that, I haven't given many classes, but you know, I enjoy giving classes about the simulation hypothesis. And it's all based on the mind, which we talked about in the beginning of this class. If you can't conquer the mind, you can get out of the simulation. And you can connect. Just like you see great acharyas like Srinivas Acharya, they're able to connect with the spiritual reality and bring things from the spiritual reality into the material illusion or so-called reality. When Srinivas Acharya sometimes goes deep in meditation, he comes out of his meditation with a garland from the spiritual world or with something else from the spiritual world. So this is a connection. And it's a really an amazing, amazing occurrence that occurs with great pure devotees. They're able to go from one world to another or be in both worlds simultaneously. I think I've actually disturbed enough people's minds with this particular description. So I think it's time to end. Thank you very much. Tomorrow evening we will have more interesting discussions. Tomorrow evening at the same time and same station. It's actually quite interesting. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.